It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.
This month's book is Gemini Force One, Black Horizon by M.G. Harris. Gemini Force One is the first in a trilogy of books inspired by the work of the late Gerry Anderson. Anderson was working on the project prior to his death, and his vision and imagination are apparent throughout this book. It looks at the possible origins of the International Rescue Organisation, so familiar to any fan of Thunderbirds. The story is told from the perspective of Ben Carrington, a 16-year-old boy who has just lost his millionaire father in a climbing accident. Despite his youth, Ben is an accomplished climber in his own right, and he and his mother, who used to be a mountain rescue volunteer in Austria, stage a daring rescue in Abu Dhabi, attracting the attention of Jason Truby. Truby is the brains behind Gemini Force, a secret rescue organisation, and he is determined to recruit Ben's mother into the group.
Guests began to arrive. His mother had invited most of their neighbours from the village, about a 30-minute drive from St. Anton. Then there was the press, a few key media contacts from Vienna. Ben recognised a few other teenagers, kids he remembered from kindergarten before he'd been sent to prep school in London. They were friendly to him, but vaguely cool and distant, as they had been for as long as he could remember. It was a fairly Austrian scene, all in all. Apart from a couple of international visitors in the shape of Addison and her father, stepmother and younger sister. Hours earlier, Ben had felt let down by the fact that not a single one of his school friends had accepted their party invitations. They'd all been too busy with unmissable social events in London. Now, however, he was relieved. He couldn't imagine how the Carolinas would survive, whatever his mother was saying. Ben could tell she was putting on an act. He'd come to know her stoic face rather well over the past few weeks. This party was the last hurrah, and Ben knew it. He pulled away from the gathering crowd. He found an almost full bottle of Stiegel Lager on a table, carefully wiped the open neck with his sleeve, and took a sip. The bar staff had been instructed not to serve Ben alcohol, but he wasn't going to let that stop him. Not tonight. He went right to the edge of the balcony, gulping down more beer. Life sucked. As he drank, he began to see things even more clearly. Why did his father have to die? Ben had hoped that his dad's death would become easier to accept as time went by, yet it was only getting worse. Carrington's company had crumbled in less than 2 months. His mother had coped only by channeling her energy into the Carolinas. Now it looked as though she was going to lose even that. It wasn't fair. Caroline had taught Ben from very young not to say those words, not to even think them. If things were fair, she would remind him, we'd be poor. Right now, however, he was finding them incredibly difficult to avoid. Where I come from, son, you have to be 21 to drink that. Ben swung round. He almost dropped the bottle over the edge of the balcony. Standing beside him was Jason Truby. Ben raised the bottle of lager in an ironic toast. I'm drinking to fate. Everything is screwed, he said, simply. There was no point lying. Caroline hadn't mentioned that Truby might be coming. Ben, however, wasn't surprised. He'd been reading about the CEO of TrubyCom. Turned out there was quite a lot to Truby's business life that Ben hadn't known. The Fireball XL5 chip, sure, everyone knew about that. Almost every major mobile phone used the Fireflash. But Ben hadn't realised that TrubyCom also had divisions involved in aviation, semiconductors, and most bizarrely of all, drilling equipment. The company had offices all over the world, from what Ben could tell. Jason Truby, like Ben's father, was the kind of man who might show up anywhere on the planet.
Ben and his mother are introduced to the advanced technical miracles of Gemini Force One and become involved in several of their early rescues, but further disaster strikes when an attempted rescue goes badly wrong. In some ways, the family story is the weakest aspect of the book, as the characters are described in detail physically, but not drawn so clearly as far as emotions or motivations are concerned. This is not a problem with a television show, but can make the book seem a little thin in places. There is also a slightly unreal quality about Ben himself, a 16-year-old boy, still at school in England and working towards his GCSEs, yet he is allowed to accompany a group of highly trained professional adults on extremely dangerous missions, even after he disobeys orders and puts himself and others in more danger. A lot of the vehicles described have a sense of familiarity about them to anyone who's ever watched Thunderbirds. The types, a hidden base, a supersonic plane, a submersible, a heavy cargo character, and so on, correspond to the five Thunderbirds. One welcome departure is the inclusion of a number of competent female characters, women who work on equal terms with the men, unlike the original lineup of the five Tracy brothers and Lady Penelope.
50 metres below the surface of the Caribbean Sea, there was little indication of the turmoil above. But Ben soon felt the difference as Pisces began to surface. Peering out of a window, he saw bleak depths to the sky. Its greyness was reflected in the rolling ocean. Enormous breaking crests and flying spray reduced visibility to almost nothing. They'd reached the storm. Ben could already feel it in his stomach and guts, which lurched with every pitch of the boat. He was lucky in being relatively immune to the worst effects of seasickness, such as dizziness and vomiting. Just the same, it wasn't a comfortable experience. Lola pointed to the screen above. She explained that it now showed periscope data being mapped onto sonar data. The resultant image was an animation of the projected position of the source of the distress signal. It was a catamaran. According to visual and sonar data, it had capsized. Two hulls were occasionally visible above the waves, thanks to two bright white stripes of anti-fouling paint. The rudders on each side of the boat were the highest points visible. At first glance, Ben thought the rudders were two people standing on the twin hulls of the capsized catamaran, until it dawned on him that they weren't moving. If there were survivors, they'd be beneath the water now. The distress radio beacon was still sending, but no one had heard from them via audio. There was a chance that there was no one left alive, but at least Gemini Force had found them. Ben followed Caroline and Lola to the command centre. The tension aboard had noticeably shifted up a notch. What awaited them inside the boat? Desperate survivors on their last mouthfuls of air? Or just dead bodies? He grasped a handhold as the boat tipped upwards and then slammed down again. The waves were at least 12 metres high. Now that they'd surfaced, the crew experienced every swoop and drop. Addison handed a loop of rope to Caroline, who immediately knotted it around her waist. Then the two women kitted themselves out in inflatable life jackets, diving masks with small gas cylinders that attached at the waist, and helmets. With each violent motion of the waves, they staggered. In exasperation, Addison yelled out, "Next time, let's get kitted up before you bring the boat up to the top." Then they tested their video and audio transmissions. When they were satisfied that everything was working, Addison asked him if anything had been heard from inside the boat. "Not a peep," he said shortly. Caroline and Addison acknowledged this with simple nods. Ben guessed they were disappointed. There certainly weren't any other rescue agencies anywhere close. Gemini Force had responded at light speed, relatively. All the same, it was disheartening to think they'd come all this way for no more than a body recovery.
The book is written with young adults and fans of Gerry Anderson's work in mind, and so it has a lot of action sequences, futuristic technology, and big, bold adventures. The writing style is also geared more towards a young adult readership, with short sentences and relatively straightforward narration. Although some events have a familiarity about them, an explosion on an oil rig, for example, major fires at a refinery, there is nothing realistic about the book. Like Thunderbirds, in both its original and its latest incarnation, it is pure fantasy and escapism, and as such works well. It will be interesting to see how Harris sustains the series, as much of the tension comes from the subplot surrounding whether Ben Carrington will be allowed to stay with Gemini Force. However, there is the start of a supervillain thread that will keep readers, especially younger readers, hooked.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Here are some handy tips and information regarding your hospital bedside TV, radio and phone service. TV channels 1 to 5 are free to use at certain times every day, so check your screen for details. To help you keep in touch with friends and loved ones, outgoing calls are also free all day, every day, to landline numbers that begin with 01, 02 or 03. Radio channels can be listened to absolutely free at any time of day. If you fancy a film, we have over 80 great films to choose from, to suit all ages and all film tastes. Why not check out the free film trailers and see if there's anything you fancy? If the latest blockbuster film isn't your thing, then how about one of our classic films, such as The Great Escape, Rain Man, or Some Like It Hot?
250?
250?
Yeah.
You're crazy. You ought to be locked up. You too. 250 guys just walking down the road just like that.
Of course, I'm an excellent driver.
You know how to drive?
Yeah.
Rain Man! You never touch the steering wheel when I'm driving. Do you hear me?
Of course, I don't have my underwear.
To find out more about bedside entertainment services and find a bundle to suit your needs, just pick up the bedside phone and speak to the friendly Hospedia customer care team. They'll help you find the best deal. And remember, to contact Hospital Radio, just pick up the phone and dial star 800.
Offering prestigious accommodation, ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs. A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare. To find out more, please telephone 01642 30 81 88 or visit our website rosevillecarecentre.com. Roseville Care Centre.
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and St. Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
But is she the equivalent of Caroline in Gemini Force One? Rob Nichols, back with us, and sorting a whole range of wonderful things out. Obviously, the Middlesbrough, Discover Middlesbrough event is coming to an end today. If you're listening to this live at the James Cook University Hospital with the A to Z of Clay.
It is.
Which is wonderful stuff there. Actually, if you are listening to us live, we will mention, although this is pointless for the podcast listeners, think of it as an added bonus. Frank Spraggan is in the James Cook University Hospital.
It's in the house.
Whereabouts is Frank Spraggan in the University Hospital of James Cook?
Is it the atrium?
Is it the atrium? It is the atrium, yes. Yeah.
Collecting for the a heart fund.
Yep, doing some fantastic stuff there. So, and in case people in Hong Kong or Los Angeles or other places in the world who actually download the Book of the Month podcasts are concerned, Frank Spraggan is a legend unparalleled as a fullback for Middlesbrough Football Club in the Jack Charlton and Stan Anderson eras.
Yes, and his teammate was Graham Souness who launched the actual heart fund, didn't he, recently? To buy a new scanner and everything at the James Cook, I believe.
Exactly. So great stuff there. And we might even try and grab a few words with Frank, actually. So we'll take our recording devices down. Unless, of course, his mind is there. He should remember me because I did actually have an autograph from him back in 1974.
Oh, he should remember that.
Once seen, never forgotten.
But let's move on to Gemini Force One. Rob, what did you make of M.G. Harris's work on what was an original manuscript, of course, from the late, great Gerry Anderson, whose son Jamie kind of worked through it and developed this through the Kickstarter campaign. Did you feel it was true to the legacy?
I guess so. It's sort of it's update, but yeah, as Jenny said, it's not set in the future as Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet presumably were. It was quite. I think it would be a good book to read for teenagers, and it's a sort of adventure story that isn't supposed to be real, is it really? And what Jenny was saying about being unlikely that a child should be able to do all this sort of thing. It's a sort of classic stowaway, isn't it, really? And I guess the female characters maybe have got more in tune with the Angel Interceptors of Captain Scarlet, perhaps. Ooh. Perhaps that was the start of that. Ooh. But
I love the sort of nods in the direction. We have the Fireball XL5 line that was actually mentioned there. Oh. There were sort of references to all sorts of things coming across within that field. And as you said, it's a very well-worn literary device. I mean, we can actually go back to Treasure Island and we see a young male protagonist who kind of gets caught up in events and so on. I think working through that basis, it was well. I was worried, I have to say, I was worried when I first actually purchased the copy. I was just too late to support it on Crowdfunder, as indeed Jamie regularly attests to me, but that's all right. I'll work through it as opposed to some other people who actually got in there beforehand. But I was worried because I thought, is it going to actually have that magic? Is it going to work? Is it going to work? But it did. And without sort of being, in the words of Jamie himself, a quote-unquote suck-up, I thought it was, you know, a really outstanding text. And as an adventure, as a very positive adventure, yes, okay, the young adult market has kind of been expanded very much with the likes of the other J.K. Or J.K. Rowling. I was the only one J.K. Rowling. Yeah. So the only person who uses initials and so on. But I thought that what we've got here was something which had a believability, it had a sense, it had clear lines. Yeah, there are certain areas which needs to be worked on a bit. There is one moment which I cannot reveal, which I thought was... It did catch me unawares. I thought that they would have actually found a way to have maintained the integrity of the team, shall we say, certainly for the maternal line. No, nothing else. I don't see anything else on that matter. No. I did enjoy it, and I thought as an event itself, certainly, I think, Jenny, you picked this up, it does address that whole notion of the visualities of the whole system. And I think already on the web you can actually see some kind of pre-visualization sides of things. Did you feel it worked well as a kind of precursor to Thunderbirds? Because although you kind of alluded to in your critique the fact that the types were actually there, was this the sort of notion which said, well, maybe how Jeff Tracy, as opposed to Jason Truby, Jeff Tracy, could have actually started coming up with that concept of putting something together and sort of, you know, producing a force for good?
I was wondering how it managed to morph from a fairly international group into five brothers. Ooh. And I looked at that and I thought, it's going to need a lot of imagination to move it from one to the next, unless the concept is picked up by Jeff Tracy, perhaps. I think it actually works better as an international force than five brothers who just happen to all have the specific skills. Whee! And a father who's a millionaire.
Millionaire ex-astronaut, wasn't he?
That's right, yes, yeah. Like Jason Truby. But he obviously isn't Jason Truby.
No.
Did you find, Rob, as you were reading through it, you could kind of think, well, yes, actually, you know, as a text in itself, I mean, you know, as we said, in terms of target audience, it just flowed well. Was it an enjoyable read?
Yes, it was. And you mentioned Harry Potter, and I suppose this is a different sort of magic, isn't it? This is like a technological, scientific magic, which is perhaps it's quite good because we're trying to bring up a new generation of engineers and scientists, and hopefully this sort of thing might inspire kids when they're at school.
I particularly like the dedication, as you'd expect, for Gerry Anderson. Thanks for so many wonderful years of entertainment, for your brilliant mind and inspiration. You'll always be remembered. And again, something which the recent Telefantasy and Society conference, the presentation that Jamie Anderson actually gave at the University of Lincoln, it epitomised a quote that he had from his father, and I'm paraphrasing this, but it was broadly speaking, be true to your dreams, be true to your beliefs, and if you're really lucky, other people will buy into them as well. But it was that essence. I mean, Jenny, as a writer, as a creator, is that something it's at your own heart that, okay, it's all very well listening to sub-editors and comments and so on, but this is actually the story I want to tell.
Yes. Sometimes it's very easy to just bow down and go, yes, okay, I will change this to that, whatever. But if you really want to create something, the creation itself is what makes you whole as a writer. On the other hand, sometimes you just have to give up any ideas of making any money out of it. So compromises all round. If you're very lucky, like Gerry Anderson, people do buy into it and you're able to do what you really care about and get paid for it. And that's magical.
Although Gerry had his challenges as well, heaps of challenges, not least of which, of course, was the Thunderbirds reworking and a variety of things, but that's a different line entirely. Rob, if we took out the Gerry Anderson mantle, and because obviously that does tend to bias people, I think, from that point of view, do you think it still works as a text in itself?
Yeah, definitely. I guess a true test would have been to get somebody of the right age bracket in here and you know, give it to a class in a school and see what they make of it.
Mm. Well, young person's book of the month. Let's
put it would be good possibly. because quite possibly, although there's a Thunderbirds on now, that it's you know, it's on at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning, that you could get a class of about
kids are so asleep in those days.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, 13 or 14 year old kids are maybe not aware of the Gerry Anderson legacy at all. That's the test.
Absolutely. Something to actually work through there. And cinematic possibilities, Jenny. You see. I was thinking Gemini, Gemini,
right.
Jenny.
There you go.
Sounds good, Dad.
Yeah. I think so. And I think because there is such strong visual writing in it, it would be quite easy to produce that sort of a visual thing. I also like the fact that this does include a certain amount of hard, if speculative, science, although I suspect a lot of readers might just bleep over the stuff about bending light and stuff like that, which is a pity, because that's one of the best bits of the book.
And as I frequently say, it's one of the things that inspired me to do a science degree, as I was fortunate enough to actually say to Gerry Anderson back in 1982, 2 years after I'd done an interview with Sue Menhennick from Legs & Co. That's strange. I'm just going back in time. It's become a time machine, really.
So the Frank Spagan autograph, did that set you on your way as well?
I think that was 6 years before. Yeah. So clearly, yes. That and seeing Rodney Marsh stark naked in the Manchester City dressing room at the same sort of year. But there we are.
Really?
It was all right. He invited me. Well, no, I best not go there. Sorry, Rodney.
It.
It's all right. It was
you
a different
it
era.
That's in my head now.
We'll just brush over that particular thing,
okay.
Etc. Or not, as the case may be. Finally, as we come to the scores and doors thing, Starburst magazine, I think, gave it a resounding 5 stars. I think SFX had about 4 stars from this point of view. Rob, what would you say in our scoreline for Gemini Force 1 as far as Book of the Month is concerned for Southside Broadcasting?
8.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go 9.
Okay.
Jenny, I suspect you might be a bit harsh, but what's your final score?
I'm going to go 7.5.
Yeah, all right. But solid, I think, overall.
Yeah.
And has promise.
Final point, Jenny, actually, you mentioned in your review about the importance of female protagonists and lines of that. Mm. I mean, is that something, I mean, obviously, different culture, different zone from this point of view, although arguably, as Rob just said, with the Angels, with Lady Penelope, there were strong female characters in Gerry Anderson series, possibly more so than in Owen Allen series, and indeed other contemporaries from that point of view. Do you think that's something that M.G. Harris as a writer managed to sort of capture effectively?
I think so, yes, and I think it's one of the real pluses of the book, and that, along with the science, is the reason it got the extra half.
There you go. So, what's coming up next month, Jenny Finch?
Right, next month we're going to look at The Black Echo by Michael Connelly, the first of the Hieronymus Bosch series.
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.